And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
You are now tuned into anything potable, the most honorable, the most audible. Hold the applause, like Paul Pierce when he was fresh out the hospital, like Antoine when he sent me that.
Welcome to Anything is Potable, the Boston Celtics podcast here on the Athletic Podcast Network. I am your host, Sam Jam Packard, and joined, as always, by the kid, the god, the legend himself, Celtics beat reporter from The Athletic, Jay King, ladies and gentlemen. And we are coming to you after a bit of a brief hiatus. We took the Thanksgiving holiday off, and the Celtics had what I will describe as a pretty up and down week, getting absolutely smoked by the Brooklyn Nets, then having a bunny smoke fest against the San Antonio Spurs and dropping that game in San Antonio before coming back and Toronto Raptors in what was generally an ugly game, but turned out Jason Tatum is an amazing passer now. That's what everyone will have you believe. Jay, what has been your biggest reaction from the Celtics' past three games? What have we learned about this team over kind of this last up and down stretch?
Not too much. I do think we're learning that Enes Kanter can be useful for this team.
Well,
that's
Enes not Kanter his name. That's there you go, Enes Freedom.
Mr. Freedom. That's one thing we've learned over the last eight games. The Celtics are demolishing teams with Enes Kanter on the court. And obviously, he didn't really play before that. And obviously, Robert Williams has been hurt, so his minutes will probably get cut. I would assume he'll still be in the rotation in some way after this because of how well he's played, because of how well the Celtics have played with him on the court. The Celtics' rebounding numbers are insane with Kanter in the lineup. Like, significantly above the best offensive rebound rate of the last 25 years when Enes Kanter is on the floor. And it's not that surprising because he's one of the greatest offensive rebounders ever.
Is Mr. Freedom really the solution to what ails this team? It didn't really seem like that's going to help them get easy offense. Even though he's a great offensive rebounder, he's pretty good at offensive rebounding. I feel like there's some inflation there because it's often him missing and then getting his own putbacks. But is that what the Celtics are needing to become a solid offensive team? Is just better offensive rebounding? Is Mr. Freedom really the solution?
I mean, he's not a perfect solution. he's not going to just make them a juggernaut. He's not going to put them up there with the Warriors and Suns just by playing some more minutes. But you asked me what we learned. And we
That's
have learned
fair.
That Enes Kanter can help the Celtics when he plays. And then other than that, it's like kind of a similar pattern to most of their games. When they hit shots, everything looks good. When they don't hit wide open shots and they're very bad at hitting wide open shots, then they can have some really, really tough stretches. And we saw one at the start of the Spurs game. That was disgusting. We got to talk about Udoka kind of lighting up, not even lighting up. I don't even think it's right to call it lighting up. He's just honest. He's just going to tell you how he feels. And after that game, he basically said these guys need to start playing for each other all the time. I thought that was pretty telling.
It's kind of weird, though, because I watched the Spurs game. I actually didn't see those email quotes, but I watched the Spurs game. Is playing for each other going to help them make a layup? Is playing for each other going to help them not start the game 3-for-20?
Probably.
Is it? Yeah. Is that make your layup game? It makes you you no longer smoke bunnies as long as you're playing for the guy next to you?
Well, I think part of the problem earlier in that game was, like, guys were just, with no pass, trying to drive against set defense. And it was just a lot of isolation ball, especially early in that game. I actually thought the Celtics played great for a while in that game. Like, when they were coming back, when they were fighting back from, what was it, the 26-point deficit, I thought they played great. Tatum was getting into the paint, making things happen for other people. He was scoring. Cantor came in, gave him some good minutes. Marcus Smart. But when things go badly for this team, it seems like it goes really badly. That the end of that Spurs game, they gave up a 15-0 run at the end of a game against a bad, bad, bad team.
Yeah, there. I really try to be Mr. Positive, but that Spurs game, it's really hard for me to, like, have any sort of spin zone. Like, they started off terribly, they clawed their way back, and then just completely fell apart in the end. And you know what? I try to have a growth mindset. I try to be positive, but, like, that's just, like, feels like the type of loss that this team has had over the past 2 years. And I just don't have a good explanation for it. And I can say on to the next one, and I can say, yeah, things will get better when they start making open shots. But that was just an ugly game. I just went to bed on that night just with a gross taste in the mouth. It was a terrible game. And I'm like, thank God they came back and won in Toronto, which was also kind of an ugly performance. But I think we saw Jason Tatum. Like, Toronto has a special, like, type of defense where they really, really pack the paint and really basically leave guys wide open in the corners. And so, Tatum got a lot of hype, I felt like, for having 10 assists, but that's exactly what he was supposed to do. Like, they were playing basically to get the ball out of Jason Tatum's hand. It just happened that, it felt like more shots went in, more, like, guys started hitting. I think it was a positive development, but I don't think, like, Jason Tatum played demonstrably different against Toronto on Sunday night than he has basically for the rest of the season. I just think he kind of got more assists because, you know, you had sharpshooter Grant Williams knocking down shots.
Mr. Corner, Grant Williams. His percentages from the corner have just been ridiculous this year.
His percentages across the board. He's 50-40-90. Did you see StatMuse tweet out picture of him, which was just the exact same photo they used for Steph Curry, but in a Celtics uniform? And I can't tell if it was like a bit on their part or just really, really lazy graphics. But Grant Williams, happy birthday to Grant Williams. It is his birthday today, shooting 50-40-90 on the season, which is, like, supposed to be the holy grail of statistics. But somehow, and this is absolutely a backhanded compliment, I would say it might even be an insult. That number doesn't feel as magical if Grant Williams is doing it.
I just looked up the box score, and sure enough, it now says Ennis Freedom in the NBA.
Oh, yeah, he's fully changed.
That's the first time I've seen that. Because yesterday, Monday, was the official day of him becoming a U.S. citizen, and I believe changing the name. But he's officially Ennis Freedom now. It says Ennis Freedom in the box.
Oh, yeah. Ennis Freedom.
And he was plus 15.
In that game against the Raptors, he was plus 15?
Sure was.
I did enjoy his comment today where he said that he talked to Ime about his playing time, and then he's played in every game since. And Ime said it was strictly basketball and had nothing to do with his politics. And Ennis just, like, kind of completely ignored the fact that his playing time went up directly when Rob Williams went to the bench. And there's, like, no correlation between that. Ennis has an interesting relationship with the truth. And I would say he's an interesting feller. And going on certain news programs and saying that people shouldn't be allowed to complain about freedom while celebrating freedom is kind of contradictory, some might say. I don't know. I don't know how to feel about the recent Ennis press tour, other than Ennis is kind of dealing with the objective truth is not wouldn't be accurate in my regard.
Ennis Freedom. Man, he brought cupcakes to the media today.
Oh, well, no wonder you guys are getting him such an easy pass. He's feeding you.
I'm not having a cupcake that Enes Kanter made, man. Like, there's just.
You think Enes actually made one of those cupcakes?
No, he probably bought them, I'm sure. But it's funnier to think of him, like, in his kitchen with a little, like, bib on, like, just making.
I think if Enes made the cupcakes, he would have.
Chris Forsberg.
He would have filmed it, and it would have been on social media somewhere, because Enes, I think, happens to like attention. I'm just saying that. That's not at all related to his name change, but he does happen to enjoy when the camera's on him. It's tough. Like, he has been pretty solid for them over the past couple of games. It's going to be interesting to see what happens when Rob comes back. I was actually looking at kind of just the lineup data for the Celtics this year. Only one 5-man lineup has played, I think, more than 6 games together. It's kind of wild with Jaylen Brown missing all that time and then Robert Williams missing all that time, how little the team has actually played together. And it feels like it's
Ime Udoka was so excited that they're going to have their full roster against the 76ers and, like, just jacked up about it. I think he said it's going to be the 6th time this year they'll have everybody available, which actually seems high. I'm not sure they have had 6 times with everyone available. But it'll be interesting to see how he juggles the rotation now when they are healthy, you know, because I think it's obvious that Kanter deserves to play some minutes. So how do they juggle that rotation with Kanter, Williams, and Horford? How do they juggle the perimeter bench guys with Schroeder, Richardson, Romeo, those guys all off the bench? How is he going to, like, where do the minutes go to, and whose minutes get cut when they are all healthy?
Yeah, it's interesting because that the starting lineup that we all thought has only played 6 games together, so that's Smart, the 2 Jays, Horford, and Williams. They have a net rating of 21 points per 100 possessions. So, like, they're very good defensively, but we haven't really seen them together. Like, the Celtics getting healthy should be a huge kind of bolster their success. And I think it's interesting, like, none of the stars really had a great games, and it feels like Grant Williams is playing his way into the lineup. Romeo Langford, I think, has been very solid, just been a very solid defender and continues to knock down shots. You're talking about how well Enes has played. You really haven't seen much from Peyton Pritchard and Aaron Nesmith, but my man Josh Richardson, everyone knows me, lifelong Josh Richardson fan, thinks Richardson deserves some minutes. Schroeder has been one of the most reliable guys, and so I do think it's going to be interesting to see what Ime does with that rotation, but, like, what's the longest stretch the Celtics can go with having, like, a completely healthy lineup? Because they've had one 5-man lineup that's played more than 6 games together. That's Horford, Schroeder, Marcus Smart, Tatum, and Grant Williams. And, like, that's been a pretty solid lineup, but they just haven't
That's not true. You just said a false statement.
What?
They got four lineups that have played more than 6 games together.
Well, are you counting 6 and equal? I see 3 lineups that have played 6 and 1 lineup that's played 9.
No, there's 4 lineups that have played at least 7.
Well, NBA.com is lying to me then.
No, it's not, because I'm on NBA.com right now and it's telling me the truth. You're just lying to us, bitch.
I don't, feel no need for you to call me a bitch. I think I loaded NBA.com/stats. I don't know if you media elite have a different stat page than I do, but the point still stands that whether it's 6 or 7, they've played 21 games this year.
I was just being a jerk right there.
Oh, yeah, you were.
I was just to point out that you were wrong.
I was going to go to Andrew B. right now. We are in a live room on the Athletic app, so if anyone is in the room right now, wants to get a question in, join us here live on stage, hit the little raise hand function, and you can join in us. And if you are listening to the podcast when it comes out tomorrow and want to be a part of us live, make sure you subscribe to The Athletic. So we'll go to Andrew B. right now.
Andrew, hey, how's it going? Yes, sir.
Cool. What's up? I just wanted to say that I think OG Anunoby's shot in game, was it game three of the second round last year?
Yeah.
I think that's going to change the Celtics' fortunes or juju somehow, because they haven't really been enjoyable to watch since that.
Andrew, where are you calling to us from?
Well, I'm Irish, but I'm living in Berlin.
That's awesome. I love the international flavor.
That is fantastic.
I stayed up till like 5 a.m. watching the Spurs game the other night.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And it's just kind of like my point, and I suppose my question for you guys is, I just don't feel they're enjoyable to watch anymore. And I feel that game is literally the turning point that I can kind of pinpoint. And I'm not saying there's anything mystical going on, but have you guys enjoyed watching them the last year and a bit, year and a half, I suppose? Because they're not really consistently fun to watch anymore. And they were before that with the Tatum stretch in February and March before COVID, and then in the bubble as well.
Yeah, I think you're right to some extent. Like, at the end of that playoff series, it was just a grimy battle that they overcame against Toronto. And then the Miami series, they just collapsed time after time. But then so much changed after that. You know, Gordon Hayward left. And I think he's part of the reason why those teams were fun to watch, because he was always willing to make the right play. He was always willing to swing the ball. He was always willing to do what was best for the team. He was a good cutter, good at off-ball movement, always in motion. And those things really mattered to the Celtics. And then on top of that, Kemba's knee got worse. And he was a guy who brought their offense to life because he could get into the paint against anyone. And he could set people up. And we'll talk about what's happening with him in New York, which is, like, I feel bad for the guy. But, like, so two of the guys who really gave the Celtics energy, especially on the offensive end, were either damaged in Kemba's case or gone in Hayward's case. And so that's why I think the Celtics have been less enjoyable to watch. This year, at least, they're defending and competing at a high level. And you can trust them to dig in on that end of the court. And the offense, they got to figure that out. They've got to get better at making shots. They've got to get better at moving the ball. They've got to get better at a long list of things offensively. But to me, like, it's not necessarily about the guys that are still there, although it is. Like, obviously, it's on them. But it's also, they lost a lot. They lost a lot of talent. And from that team, you know, two of the four best players were gone. And like, they've just lost a lot of talent, a lot of guys who made the game easier for everybody else. And I don't think the Celtics have enough of those guys right now.
They've just lost so much consistency. Like, there's been certain games that have been fun, like Tatum in the playoffs against the Nets going for 50. There's been certain times where it's been like, this has been a fun game. I think there's been some Jaylen games that have been fun, but just like night in, night out, you have no idea what to really expect from the Celtics, and they have just, over the past kind of 2 years, just really turned in some duds, and that part has not been fun. And I do think a part of that is like losing Gordon Hayward. Like, Gordon Hayward was never a star player, but he was the kind of guy you could just rely on to do the small things and kind of carry a second unit and make sure the Celtics were competitive in every single game that they played. Right now, it's like it's live or die with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. But if like those two guys have an off net, you're just going to see some ugly basketball. And so, I don't like the idea of the curse of the OG Anunoby shot, but it like it rings true a little bit, and I don't want to actually kind of deal with it, but it's a little scary to me that it might be true.
it all traces back to that one pass over Taco's outstretched arms.
What's more impressive, OG making that shot or Kyle Lowry throwing the perfect pass over Taco's arms?
The pass. The bubble was the reason that that was so easy, because Lowry could just back up however many feet, and in a real arena with real fans, I guess it was a real arena, but with real fans, he wouldn't have been able to back up so far. Taco would have been closer, and it would have been much more difficult to throw that pass. So blame the bubble for the curse of OG Anunoby.
I do. I blame Disney and I blame the bubble. All right, let's go to Michael M. Michael, how's it going?
Hey, guys. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Hey, nice. Big fan. Reading you guys for a while, watching you guys for a while. I was listening to your thing with Mo, and you guys were talking about it on Fake Basketballs the other day. You guys were talking about how, like, there's not a lot of movers, not a lot of cutters, a lot of stagnant with the offense. How much of that is just because most players on offense are bad, except for Tatum, Brown, and Schroeder, kind of, but, like, Schroeder's kind of incapable of doing anything when these guys move? Because, like, you hear people, like, levy the critique that they don't move a lot and that they should be, like, trying to do, like, the Warriors, like, the Heat thing, where all those guys move, but, like, isn't that because they can get away with it because there's, like, all the shooting around them and, like, people actually won't just sit at the paint?
That's a good point. A very good point.
It's a very good – no one's going to chase you around if you can't shoot. Like yeah, no one's
– Dennis Schroeder could cut all he wanted and people are just gonna be like, oh, whatever. Like, Dennis Schroeder, he's not going to make this shot from the three-point arc. So, whatever. We don't really need to chase him. When you brought up that point, I started thinking about something J.J. Redick said. And it's basically like, as a shooter, you get better shots and easier shots if you have more shooting around you, which is kind of counterintuitive. But he said, he pointed out, I believe, like Clay and Steph, how many open shots they get. And it's because everyone's petrified of their teammates. And so everyone is, you know, scrambling towards Steph. And then it's just an easy open pass to Clay. And you're right, like, that makes it easy for them, and it opens up so much space on the court where guys can cut to, and guys can relocate to and be wide open. The Celtics, they don't strike fear into guys, and I think that even goes for, like, obviously Tatum strikes fear into guys, but he's not really a guy who is going to catch and shoot a lot. So, like, you don't need to be, like, super attached to him.
To his detriment, I think he needs to catch and shoot more. I feel like he too often won't take open three-point shots.
Agreed.
Like,
agreed,
he'll kind of catch the ball and assess the situation and maybe even wait for the defender to come and then take, like, a sidestep three. Or then I think he has done a better job of attacking the basket recently, but I think he kind of passes up a lot of open shots, especially catch-and-shoot shots, just because he kind of – like, you talk about being a triple threat. I feel like that's a classic, like, middle school basketball thing. It's like, you need to catch the ball and be ready, shoot, pass, or dribble at any time. Jason Tatum's never ready to shoot. Like, that's just not, like, part of his game. And I think you're right. No one's chasing – like, one, Jason Tatum's not, like, moving without the ball, doing a lot of moving without the ball. But it extends to, like, not being a catch-and-shoot guy. There's no one on the Celtics – like, Aaron Nesmith could potentially be that, but he's just not – been that kind of guy this year. But there's no one on the Celtics right now other than Nesmith that I think a team is like, oh, we need to go over the top of screens for him. Like, we really need to stick on his hip coming around a screen because he's going to shoot. And so you're right. I do think that limits their kind of the movement, the cutting they can do on offense, because you know what? If Marcus Smart or Romeo Langford or even the three-point king Grant Williams is doing a bunch of movement or running around like, teams are just going to kind of sag in the paint. Like, all that movement is for naught. And so I do think the Celtics are ultimately limited by a lack of shooting and a lack of kind of offensive talent. It's not like there's a scheme that's going to unlock everything they can do. I do think there's more they can do, especially with, like, off-ball cutting, just to try to get kind of more motion just going towards the basket. But I do think they're ultimately limited by just, like, what the kind of guys they can put on the floor.
Yeah, I think that's been the biggest problem with this roster from day one, is just they're going to be playing a lot of guys who are not great shooters. And Tatum and Brown are the two best shooters on the team, but they're also going to be the guys with the ball in their hands. And so there's not much spacing around them. And that's it. That was a great call. Great point.
Two for two so far. Let's see if Matt C. can follow it up with a third solid call. Matt C., how are you doing? Matty C., baby! Nothing. All right. They're going to try Jonathan R. then.
What's up, Jonathan?
How's it going?
You know, it's going great. I have just a quick question here that just found out we're expecting our first child, and I want to know.
Hey, congratulations, man.
Appreciate it. I want to know from Sam Jam Packard himself, how early is too early to start teaching my child about the Kaizen mindset?
Never too early. You should be teaching him right now, teaching him or her right now. I think you got to give your wife the positive growth mindset, and you got to give your child the belief that he can grow up to do absolutely anything he wants. I would even start reading him the growth mindset in the womb. I mean, I think there's studies out there that children are very impactful, and you can teach them a lot. Even music, anything. Actually, don't read him the actual growth mindset book because it is very boring. But yeah, you can start preaching him to the words of the growth mindset probably from right now for throughout his or her entire life.
Yeah, great advice. And I also just want to give props to Jay for, I think his disinterest in preseason summer workouts is coming to fruition here with Jason Tatum, who's so strong that his shooting splits are absolutely terrible. I'm a Jason Tatum like stan from day one. I've defended him to my friends, but what is happening now? If you could just give some insight, because it looked like he was on the direct trajectory, but he's fallen off. And I'm trying to stay Kaizen for my kid, but it's hard.
Have you thought about naming the kid Kaizen?
Yeah, I'm gonna take that under advisement.
What a call! What a call! Yeah, the Tatum thing.
It's weird.
Has been weird. I mean, for them to go this long into the season, it is 21 games now they have played. So it's a quarter of the season has passed, and he's shooting, I believe, less than 40% from the field, 39.5% from the field, just 31.6% from three, which would be by far a career low. Even his free throws, he's at a career low in free throw percentage.
It's because he's too bulked. He's too jacked up. I first thought he was making fun of you, saying you were against summer workouts. I thought it was a fat joke, but
I thought it was a fat joke too. I was a little disappointed that it wasn't a fat joke.
Yeah, me too. But I don't get it, because he seemed like he figured something out. He had four straight 30-point games. He was like really attacking the basket, and then the past three games, I don't know exactly what the issue's been, but he just completely fell off just in terms of field goal attempts and free throws drawn. I guess kind of similar numbers, but yeah, his shooting, he was, I think, like, he knocked down a lot of threes against that win against the Thunder, but then was still 1-for-9 against the Houston in that win, 1-for-9 from three against the Nets, 2-for-7 against the Spurs. It's like, what has happened to his three-point shot? I don't understand it.
And it's weird because, obviously, when things go right for Tatum, there are not many scorers who are more difficult to guard, because he's 6'8". He can get his sidestep off against anyone. When he gets going to the basket, he is just a handful. But when he's gone bad this year, it's like he can't pull himself out of it. You know, like if he starts a game poorly, he often finishes.
He's done for. Yeah.
You know, like 2-for-16 against Toronto, and I know he made a lot of great passes, and I know they play a style that forces the best player, especially on a team with no shooting, to pass the ball. But 2-for-16, like, geez. He was 4-for-16 against Brooklyn. That's two of the last three games. So he's just got to be more efficient. He's got to find ways to get himself going. And he's to his credit, like, he's trying to figure out the whole passing thing and the whole go to the paint to create for others. I thought for a stretch of that San Antonio game, actually, he was doing such a great job of getting the offense going. And he's trying on that front, but the when he's gone bad, it's weird. It's weird. It's been weird, man. It's just been weird. It's like he's got COVID all over again.
What have you thought about Jaylen's game in the four games that he's been back? Since he's like been on this kind of limited minutes thing, but they're only they're 2-2 in his return. He hasn't scored more than 20 points in any of those games. Like, he's had that kind of explosion of points. I think it was in that Rockets game. But is it something to be concerned about? Like, it just feels like his, I don't know, it's such like a body language doctor thing. It's like his athleticism or his body language hasn't been there in his four games, but he just hasn't looked near like as explosive. Is it something the Celtics should be kind of worried about long term?
Yeah, I thought it was weird when, I think it was it the Brooklyn game? When they said he's going to be questionable for the next week, and then he played 30 minutes later. Like, he's going to be questionable for a week. Why don't you just sit him down? Why don't you make sure that his body's right before he starts playing 24, 27, 28 minutes in an NBA basketball game? So I think they've handled this injury a little strangely. He came back and played against Houston and said, you know, I don't feel great. I was sore. It wasn't my normal self out there. And then he didn't get any more time off. So I don't know what's going on with that injury. I don't think he's looked quite like himself, but it's tough to get going with more limited minutes. And they're actually holding him to the limited minutes this time. Unlike when he came back from COVID and immediately played like 60 minutes in a double overtime season opener.
But he dropped 46 that game, so maybe they're just trying to recapture that magic.
But yeah, he hasn't had like a Jaylen Brown outburst since he's come back. And I do think that when the Celtics are healthy, they're going to need to kind of figure out how to play together, because when one of their main guys is out, then Dennis gets more chances, you know? And when everyone's healthy, like, where do those chances go to? Or
issue? Like, yeah, I think they're going to have to figure that out. But it's like, if you look at the numbers, they've been pretty damn good when all their guys are going together. I think the three-man lineup just went, whenever Jason, Jaylen and Rob Williams have been on the court, I think they have like a plus 19 net rating. Like, they are absolutely just destroying teams when those three guys are on the court. It just hasn't happened very often. I think like those three guys, you're going to have to tell me what NBA.com tells me, whether my numbers are correct, but those three guys have not played that long together. I think only like, well, now my filtering is terrible. Jay, what filter? How do you decide to do a minimum like games played when you're on NBA.com? What's your take us behind the lens? No, I know how to do it. I know how to do it. I'm asking your strategy here, Jay. I know how to operate the website, but I'm asking you. You're a professional journalist. How do you determine your sample size?
I mean, you can just look at the samples. How do I determine what matters? Like, what's big enough to matter?
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, like, all of the sample sizes are small, and they are all just – every piece of data that I look at is just kind of a small piece of the puzzle. That's how I kind of look at it, especially at this stage of the season.
Well, Jalen, Jason, and Rob have played a total of 8 games together, and it's been 161 minutes, according to my version of NBA.com, not the special insider's version of NBA.com that Jay has.
Are you saying NBA.com? You do, bro.
Well, according to mine, that's like a plus 19 net rating with 94 defensive rating. Like, I don't really think it's going to be – like, yes, they're going to have to adjust to it, but – for as long as Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown have existed, when they're on the court together, the Celtics have been fine. It's just that they don't have – they haven't really been on the court together for long stretches of time over the past 2 years. Like, the Celtics' biggest problem last year was, like, they really had – were plagued by injuries. And it feels like they're kind of dealing with the same thing right now. Like, I just want to have a solid stretch of 10 games of a fully healthy team. And then I feel like we'll be able to, like, really evaluate, like, what this Celtics team is.
Yeah, when I was saying they need to get used to playing together, I was more thinking about, like, Schroeder, Smart, Jalen, and Jason. When those four guys are on the court, I think in some ways it's just kind of a strange fit because there are a lot of guys who play best with the ball in their hands. And obviously two non-shooters in Schroeder and Smart, but guys that aren't, like, super feared. And then whoever's the big man is probably not a great shooter either, or definitely not a great shooter. So that's more like those four guys, because that's going to be their closing lineup. And
should it be, though? Because I just looked it up. I can do the NBA.com thing. Those guys have a negative net rating 9 games, those four guys on the court together. And they're like, I have a decent defensive rating, but they just haven't scored any points. Like, is that their best offensive lineup, those four guys and a big? Or do you think they need – I just think if they, like, need more shooting out there. I don't know. I know that's been kind of the go-to closing lineup. I just don't know if it's, like, should be. The question is, who else on the roster do they have to kind of make it a bigger threat on offense? Like, maybe it's Grant Williams, but no one's really guarding Grant Williams. There's no one you can put in the lineup who, like – another team's defense will respect and then kind of open things up. So maybe they do need to figure things out, but so far it has not really worked out for them.
That group has had some rough moments so far. And obviously the Celtics' fourth quarter net rating has just not been good. And I think that's part of it is, like, obviously those guys, they haven't all been healthy at the same time all the time. But, like, those four guys need to figure out how to play together. And I think Ime said that after the Spurs game. He's like, yep, those four guys who started, they need to figure out how to play together.
Ime is a teller of truths.
He's a gem. He's a gem. He really just shares what's on his mind. Bless him. Bless him.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Let's go to Lucas S. Lucas, how are you doing?
Are you okay?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, first of all, big fan of both of you, so I appreciate you letting me speak on this. Please say hello to Trill for me as well. Huge fan.
Will do.
I just had a question. I don't really buy into the narrative the Celtics can't draft that some people try to peddle. But you look at previous years, Pritchard hasn't looked great this season. Naismith obviously still trying to find some level of comfort, and some of the guys going right after them. You look at Desmond Bane, you look at Tyrese Maxey, have been having really successful seasons. I'm just kind of curious, with the front office shakeup this offseason, if you have noticed anything different that the Celtics are doing or have heard anything about Celtics changing their approach to draft and how they go about prospects. And if you see that as a problem that the Celtics have right now, is they try to build out some of those supporting role characters around their core pieces, or if it's just unlucky with who they've landed versus who they have missed out on.
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I think it's a very complicated question. So, like, obviously, the Celtics crushed some of their most important draft picks. They had the number one overall pick in a draft where everybody thought Markelle Fultz should go number one. And they decided, you know what? He's not our guy. Jason Tatum is our guy. That is a franchise-changing decision. If they had drafted Fultz, how screwed would they be right now?
Extremely.
But
although maybe Markelle Fultz just turns into what we all thought he was going to be, and maybe he was under some sort of process-based curse in Philadelphia. Who knows?
Yeah, but they made the right decision there. Like, they struck it rich again with Jaylen Brown. Marcus Smart was a good pick. They have found a lot of contributors, like Grant Williams, late first round pick. He's contributing. Robert Williams, late first round pick. He's, you know, a ceiling raiser for them, and obviously one of their best players. So it's not like they had no hits in the draft. I think the bigger issue with the drafting piece is that, like, they let a lot of depth get away. And I don't think it's just the drafting either. Like, obviously, you know, right now they're not getting much from Romeo Langford. They're not getting much from Aaron Nesmith, two guys who are lottery picks. But to me, like, it's more like they let Marcus, in the same offseason, they lost Kyrie Irving, Al Horford, Marcus Morris, Aaron Baines, Terry Rozier. Like, that's a ton of dudes. They lost Gordon Hayward. They just lost a ton of depth. So it's not so much to me the drafting. It's more just for various reasons, whether it was money reasons or because guys just wanted to leave or because the locker room didn't have much chemistry or because Kyrie wanted to go team up with Kevin Durant or Al Horford wanted more money and a different opportunity. Like, there are tons of reasons for them not being as deep, but they aren't nearly as deep as they were 3 years ago. And that's the issue. And part of it is drafting. If Romeo or Nesmith had been a stud, like, cool, that would change a lot of things. But I think it's more just like there have been a lot of decisions in and around drafting that have left them without as much depth.
Yeah, I feel like they haven't really done that well on the free agency market. I think certainly bringing in Tristan Thompson last year is like evident of that. Like, they've had all those guys and haven't really replaced them. I think some part of that is like they spent a bunch of money on Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving and Al Horford, and like they had for that big run, but then they didn't really have cap space to go out and get kind of guys to replace them. I don't think it's like a draft issue. Like, they had actually a solid run of going Terry Rozier, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Rob Williams in four consecutive drafts. I think you can well, certainly have your questions about Romeo with, I guess, Tybold was also on the board. I don't know how you feel about Brandon Clark, but like, when you're picking in the second half of the draft or like not in the lottery, I think it's really hard to kind of hit on those picks. It's kind of impressive that they were kind of able to go to, and get Robert Williams. I mean, the Riffs man did predict it, and so maybe there's a kind of playing with fate there. With the Nesmith draft, certainly you might have wanted to have Sadiq Bey, and Maxey is playing well. There are a number of players who kind of after Nesmith, but I don't know. I think you're right. That's like they haven't had the great depth there since that kind of that run. The thing that I've been thinking about recently is like, what would have happened if they had just kept Terry Rozier instead of going out and getting Kemba? Like, it feels like they would have had a much more solid kind of point guard who kind of fits in with the timeline of Jalen and Jason. And then they would have probably had more money to kind of go out and support the team. And like Terry Rozier, I saw this was some goofy tweet, but it was like Terry Rozier has more than double what Kyrie and Kemba have done this year combined in terms of points per game. And so, like, that's the biggest question.
Well,
like,
Kyrie hasn't played, so.
That's the joke, Jay. Thank you for spelling that out. But, like, what happens if Terry Rozier kind of takes that step back in that bench role and, how do you say this, maybe handles it more maturely, and so then the Celtics want to do more to keep him around instead of having him everyone, all sides agreeing that he's going to leave in free agency. Like, what happens then? And I guess I was mostly just bringing it up to try to transition into talking about what's happening to Kemba now, who has been taken out of the rotation there in New York, which you feel really bad for Kemba because he is an awesome guy by all accounts and just has been a very solid dude. But from a pure soulless basketball perspective, it's got to be the right move if you're Tom Thibodeau and the Knicks.
Yeah, I mean, their numbers have been way worse with Kemba on the court. Obviously, their defense, which is the only reason that they were a playoff team last year and as competitive as they were and righted their franchise, took a huge step back when you're starting Kemba Walker and Evan Fournier. And that's part of the reason why the Celtics got rid of those guys. didn't hold on to Kemba. It didn't give more of an effort to bring Fournier back because they wanted to surround Tatum and Jaylen Brown with, you know, a bit more of a feisty defensive-minded group. But the Kemba thing, I never thought he'd be out of the rotation this quickly because even last year when he had all his struggles and was in and out of the lineup, the end of last year, his last 10 games or whatever it was, he was scoring a ton. He was playing much better. But obviously, you know, the knee's just not holding up. And with him, like a slight 6'0" guard, he has to be so good offensively to warrant a position on the court. And if he's not at that level offensively, and he hasn't been, he's been good, though. He's shooting like 41% from three. It's not like he's not scoring at all. But he's not doing it at the rate that the Knicks need to offset, you know, his defensive limitations and everything else. So I'm stunned, though. I mean, he got benched for Derrick Rose,
Emmanuel Quickley.
Rose and Emmanuel Quickley, you know. Like
I don't know. Those, like,
for
that's
Aaron
like
Arks, you know, like, it's just stunning. I didn't think it would happen this early, but it's just, it makes you think back to the decision by the Celtics to bring in Kemba Walker in the first place. Like you said, they could have just kept Terry Rozier, although things went so bad with Terry Rozier that last year. Like, he wasn't very good on the court, and he was obviously disgruntled. Remember, he went on First Take and just kind of lit everyone up.
Yeah, he was so fucking cool.
So it wasn't like that was the most obvious decision. Like, we need to keep Terry Rozier. He's our point guard of the future. Like, no, Terry Rozier was very average that season on the court, probably less than average, and also was disruptive. So I understand why they didn't just go that route. But you wonder, like, if they had just pivoted to going to a younger team around Tatum and Brown and just not spending, you know, that huge free agency slot and going after younger guys. Like, they could have gone after, like, obviously in retrospect, it's very different, but they could have, like, made a run to go after somebody like Alex Caruso, who I think was a restricted free agent that year.
Also, like, what trickle-down effects does it have on Gordon Hayward? Like, does Gordon Hayward kind of become a de facto ball handler there? Is he, like, happier with his role if he has a bigger role, and if it's just Hayward, Jalen, and Jason, maybe you keep him moving forward because he's not, like, kind of going to look for his touches anywhere? I know this is all pure speculation, but hey, you guys are the ones who turned into a basketball podcast. That's what we do here. But
and anything is possible, including speculation.
Rampant speculation, but maybe Hayward sticks around and you kind of have a more, and you're able to add more depth, which it still feels like the Celtics are lacking. Although,
but it's also worth noting, like, just how good that team was when Kemba and Hayward were healthy. Like, for the brief time those guys were together and healthy, that team was really freaking good. That was,
if Hayward doesn't twist his ankle, the Celtics win the NBA Finals that year.
I don't know about that. LeBron James and Davis are pretty good.
Look at the standings right now. It doesn't seem like they're that good.
But that team was definitely the best team of the Brad Stevens coaching era. Like, had a legitimate chance, obviously, to win the Eastern Conference. They probably should have won the Eastern Conference if they just handled their business against.
Or they had like a not hobbled Gordon Hayward. Like, remember the Heat series where Hayward came back and yahoos were just dumb optimist Celtics fans were just saying that this was the solution, and then he's just like wasn't at all effective.
Yeah. It was. Yeah. I mean, it was post OG Anunoby curse. I think there also might be a curse of Celtics point guards.
That might be the case. I mean,
Isaiah, the poor guy, hasn't been in the NBA forever.
Did he just get ejected from like a Team USA qualifying event?
Someone texted me to say that. I didn't see what actually happened.
I saw a tweet about it, but the tweet was purely in Spanish and no hablo español bueno, pero. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he got ejected, but shouts to Isaiah. Yeah, maybe ever since trading him, that's the point guard curse that has been on the Celtics.
And then Kyrie, like, just opted not to play basketball this season. Kemba wants to play basketball, would love to play basketball, but they've opted not to let him play basketball in New York. And it's just been, like, just a turn for the worse for the recent Celtics point guard. Like, I hope Marcus Smart can just be okay.
If they just let him be a point guard, maybe. The thing that's interesting about the Celtics, I think more so just interesting about the Eastern Conference right now, the Celtics have been wildly inconsistent. They right now are 11-10 and are in 11th place in the Eastern Conference. But they're only 3.5 games back of first place in the Eastern Conference. They're only 2 games back of third place in the Miami Heat. Like, and it kind of goes to why the Knicks are making a move right now. Like, all of these basketball games matter just because it feels like the East has taken a huge step up just in terms of the number of quality teams. And so the Celtics, maybe they're getting healthy right now and they can go on a run here. But also, I think it came out today, some of those nerds out there, that their schedule is definitely getting much harder. Their December schedule is certainly a grind. They have their first West Coast trip coming up. But they're still very much in this thing. They just need to string some wins together, but they have to start doing that consistently eventually. And you just can't drop. Normally, I would say, like, the season doesn't start till Christmas. I still kind of believe that, but you can't be dropping games to the San Antonio Spurs if you're going to want to kind of keep up with the rest of the teams in the East. Or maybe disregard everything that I said and that the East will all just beat up on each other and everyone will have basically like 35 to 45 wins and maybe you can just kind of sneak in there with a mediocre record. I don't know. I just don't know how to explain. I've never seen an Eastern Conference standing look like this where there's legitimately 11 teams with basically the same record.
Yeah, I mean, it's not entirely true that they have basically the same record. But yeah, it's definitely bunched. 11 teams are above 500 in the East, which is extremely rare. And that doesn't even include Toronto, which has been competitive. Indiana, which used to be competitive. but yeah, there are a lot of at least decent teams. A lot of competitive teams, I'll put it that way, in the East. The Wizards are much better than they were last season, at least at the beginning of last season. The Bulls are much better. The Heat loaded up. The Hornets have played better. So, yeah, like, the East is better. It's not the same conference it used to be.
Yeah, no, years past where, like, under 500 teams would get the 7th and 8th seed. I think that is over, but I guess we are seeing some cream rise to the top. Like the Nets are the 1 seed. The Bucks are 8-2 over the last 10 games. But the Celtics need to just string some wins together. They were doing pretty well when they had the kind of playing the league's best defense, but they seem to have fallen off that a bit. I'm hoping that them being healthy will kind of allow them to do so. But they have this game against the 76ers, and then they will go west. I think that will be a good test for them. Maybe they'll have a magic plane ride. What was that, 3 years ago with the Kyrie team? But we shall see. Is there anything else, Jay, you've noticed over the past three games? Any other NBA observations you want to go or say before we get out of here?
I got nothing left for you.
I got nothing else.
I've unloaded all my bullets already.
We've both unloaded all chambers. I've just been stuck learning about tort reform for the past 3 days, and so you know what? My mind hasn't been locked in on basketball, but I appreciate you guys joining us here on the Athletic Live Room on the Athletic app, and appreciate everyone who's listened to the podcast, supports the podcast. If you enjoyed, please subscribe, rate 5 stars. Subscribe to the Athletic so you can join us here in these live rooms. Hope we'll be doing one later in the week, probably on Thursday after the 76ers game. Jay, I don't have anything to say to end out the podcast. Do you have any topics that could be potable?
Anything is potable.
Anything is potable, my good friend. Anything is potable.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.